Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I know we've been on hibernation a little bit, but plenty of college football talk and then NFL in the coming weeks as well as the calendar has turned to August and we are in the home stretch here. So, Daniel Dopp in the house. Dopp, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing?
It's good to have you. We had Troy the other day just press record and leave, and I heckled him, so it's good to have you back, and I'm going to heckle you as well.
Oh, I appreciate all the heckling. Bring it, man.
No falling asleep at the wheel here, because I know you just got off the marathon, the fantasy football marathon. Great job, by the way.
I appreciate that.
But,
thank you.
Are you awake?
Barely. I'm, like, hardly holding on, but you know what? I feel like that's what we're all doing right now.
That's true. That's true, but I got some news that'll wake you up.
All right, bring it.
Big news for Daily Wager.
Wait, you guys are having me on tomorrow?
No.
Oh.
Unless you wear your skeleton out.
Okay.
No, going to ESPN2. We just announced that as we've been on air, as we started taping here, it's just hitting the wave airwaves.
That's awesome.
So we'll be same bat time, but different bat channel. 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on ESPN2.
That's
now.
Dope.
So,
dude,
we're psyched.
Congratulations,
we're taking
man.
Away your spy. Like, weren't you guys former ESPN2, and now you went to pay
yeah,
internet?
Yeah, I mean, they decided that pay internet was a better place for us. I don't know why. I felt like I was good being naked on television, but apparently they thought that the Plus was a better decision. So, but I'm super stoked for you. That's going to be awesome. Hopefully be able to have some more eyes on it and people be able to
yep.
see more
and
of
then
the show.
We're also going Sunday mornings.
That's
so
awesome.
9 a.m. So before the fantasy show at 10 a.m.,
yep.
we will be 9 a.m. for the hour, the primer, if you will.
Wow, so you've got Daily Wager and then Fantasy Football Now and then an entire day's worth of football.
Right.
That sounds like a pretty good Sunday.
So you those who are big football fans, punch the clock with the significant others now so you can do your you can say hi, then say bye to them until February. What was I going to say? The reason you guys do that is you carry the flag for ESPN Plus. It's you guys are the, like...
Yeah, we try.
The It Show.
We try to do some stuff. You know, us, always late with Katie Nolan. You got Ariel and the Bad Guy. But, like, we try to, you know, we have some fun on there.
And my cameos drive a lot of subscriptions.
I mean, your cameo with Strawman was pretty legit. I'm not going to lie.
It was good?
Yeah.
Has the Statterpiller one aired yet?
Statterpiller has not aired yet. That one's coming down the pipe.
I was a little disappointed. The first taping we did with that, F-bomb, yelling, and then the second one was more subdued. I think we're using the second one.
Yeah.
So I was a little... But you liked my acting.
Oh, it was so great.
Well, I was very, I'm a method actor. I mean, I was in character of being a sports anchor.
You could tell.
And a host, an analyst of gambling. So it wasn't like you were asking me to, you know, play a 90-year-old with a cane. You know, I was in character always.
It was good. I loved it. I loved it. I hope to get some more Doug on the fantasy show.
I'm all ears, my man. A lot of crossover coming up. So, but it's going to be on ESPN2. Thank you to everyone who's been contributing in terms of just their loyal viewership, and obviously those listening who also contribute on the show. It's been very much a widespread team effort, so we appreciate all that. Coming up on the podcast, I should mention, Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats Information Network. You also hear him on this podcast, also see him on Daily Wager. We're going to talk our favorite season win totals in college football coming up, and then also Brad Edwards. And Brad and I go way back in terms of our college game day radio stuff, but he's going to weigh in on the SEC and also tell you why it is wasting money to bet on all these long shots to win the college football national championship this year. So a lot of college football coming up, and excited to just kick off our football podcast really until the Super Bowl. So let's get to it.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
Let's now bring in Matt Eumanns, someone you've heard frequently here on the Behind the Bets podcast and also seen on Daily Wager and a staple in Las Vegas, a guy I go back. Matt, I think we're looking at like 15 years now, man.
Doug, has it been that long? Jeez.
I moved to Vegas in 05, so 14 and a half.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay. You moved to Vegas as a wide-eyed, naive kid who didn't know a lot about sports betting, and look at you now.
Oh, the stories we could tell. The stories we could tell. So, look, man, it's always fun to catch up. I know we were unable to cross paths this summer. We had a couple trips on the table that I flaked out on. Shocker. And I'm not going to be able to make it out to Super Contest weekend, but we have this great platform to talk college football win totals. I can't believe the season starts in about 10 days, so I'm fired up. I know you are. I just want to get into some win totals that you have circled and already played, and we'll talk about mine as well. But first, Notre Dame, obviously a popular program, and you are fading them a little bit and don't expect them to get back to the playoff next year.
No, I would be shocked by a playoff repeat for the Irish. And Brian Kelly's one of my favorite coaches. I think he's an excellent game day coach. If you go back to last year's season opener and how he basically undressed Jim Harbaugh in the first half of that game, and Harbaugh looked totally unprepared and kind of lost out there. But I just don't think this Notre Dame offense has got the type of game-breaking talent that Kelly's had to work with in the past. And you look at junior quarterback Ian Book, he's got four starters on the line in front of him. But I just don't see the receiver talent, the running back talent that the Irish have had the past few years. I think Book is more of a conservative quarterback, runs an efficient offense. And I think that's going to catch up to the Irish here. This year, a lot of people look at the schedule and say, well, there are two big games that Notre Dame's probably going to lose as 11.5-point dogs at Georgia on September 21st and 7-point dogs at Michigan on October 26th. Now, I think the Irish will lose both of those games on the road. This win total decision might be a dramatic decision. It comes down to late November when Notre Dame finishes at Stanford. But I'm not going to say that the Irish are automatic to win all these home games. They're going to be favored in all seven home games. Virginia, Virginia Tech, USC might jump up and upset them. The key here is a number. William Hill Sportsbooks right now has got this win total at 9.5. I wouldn't necessarily play this under 9 because I really think this team's capable of getting to 9-3. The ceiling is 10-2. Seldom in sports betting do you want to bet on a best-case scenario and bet over a high total. I think the potential is there for Notre Dame to go 10-2, but I certainly don't expect that to happen. I think Kelly's got a 9-3 team, play under 9.5 at -150, and that's one of my favorite college football win totals.
Yeah, I mean, you're reiterating something we talk about a lot. It's just the half point, the juice, and like where you see the ceilings and the floors of these teams. I mean, even at Stanford at the end of the year is a tough one. You never know. With the injury factor, but I agree with you. The at Georgia and at Michigan are the two losses. I there's no way I would bet over, and it all depends on the juice on the under. But I think you have to play there, and then obviously, as you know, but you can always play out of these positions too, right? Like if they have to run the table the last three games to get to 10 wins, you can sort of like do an open money line parlay or just roll over the money lines if you have a huge play and you want to just protect yourself a little bit, things like that. Because that Virginia Tech game at home in South Bend is interesting because they're also catching the Hokies off a bye. So it is, there's many layers to kind of play out of position. But if you think the ceiling's 10, that's a great position to be in on the under 9.5. All right. So my favorite play, something I've talked a lot about on the show, is Clemson over 11.5. And it's -110 both sides. And look, it is hard to bet on a team to go undefeated in the regular season. But A, they did it last year. And we saw it with Alabama a year ago as well, a team that historically has had a really solid defense and just kind of average quarterback play. What happens when they get a prolific offense? And to me, that's what Trevor Lawrence is going to add. We saw a taste of it at the end of last season, especially the championship game, just what this offense is capable of. And FPI favors the Tigers by at least 20 points in every game but two. And those other two games, they're over two touchdown favorites. So it should be another cruise control season for Clemson. They get A&M at home, and I just don't think – I think over 11.5 is – like there may be like one close game, late third, early fourth, maybe the South Carolina game, which is the end of the regular season. But besides that, I have to play Clemson over 11.5. I just think they'll be that dominant.
Well, you look at Clemson, and the quarterback would have been the number one pick of this most recent NFL draft, right? I think Clemson's going to get two scares. I'll say I don't know where they're going to come from. I mean, obviously, you can look at the schedule and say, well, it might come from A&M. It might come from Syracuse. It might come from South Carolina. I think Clemson, if you bet this over, you are going to have to survive one or two scares. I'll say two. But Clemson obviously is capable of doing that. I really don't have an interest in betting against a Clemson team here that, like you said, I think it's going to be at least a two touchdown favorite in every football game this season. So, like you said, you can make that bet. I'm not going to argue with it, but I'm just telling you beforehand that you're going to get two scares that you don't expect. Right.
We certainly had one with last year with Syracuse where he had to bail the game.
Sure.
I think the schedule just plays out really well, but you're right. Even Kelly Bryant had to save the day at A&M a year ago. So, Your second favorite play is the Huskies over 9.5. I think Jacob Eason's a decent play at like 60-1 to win the Heisman. Just because you lose your starting position to Jacob Fromm doesn't mean you're a bad quarterback. And even Browning was kind of in the mix when he was a Heisman conversation. And I think with voting for the Heisman Trophy is so regional that I think there'll be some like love from the SEC kind of region if he's having an outstanding season. And for some reason, Tua and Lawrence aren't in the mix. For some reason, like I said, it's 50 or 60 to 1. I think it'd be worth it.
Well, here's the thing about the Huskies I like is, not just Jacob Eason. He's 6'6". His right arm's a rifle. He throws with accuracy on the run. I like him a lot, But I said when I started watching Jake Fromm at Georgia that I thought Fromm was going to be a Heisman winner in a couple of years. And I'm not sure if Fromm's going to put up the type of numbers to win the Heisman. But I think he's got that type of talent. You look at the Washington offense, the top three wideouts come back. Hunter Bryant, the top tight end. You get depth at running back. You have experience on the offensive line. I think Washington's offensive firepower is going to increase. Some people will look at Jake Browning and say, well, they might not be as good without Browning. He wasn't very good last season. I think Eason's going to take this offense to the next level. Cynics will say, well, you got two returning starters on defense. Chris Peterson pulled in a stellar recruiting class. He's got some stud defensive linemen coming in. I think the offense could be great. The defense will mature. And I think the schedule also breaks just right for the Huskies. USC, Oregon, Utah, Washington State all play in Seattle. I think Washington might go off as a favorite in all 12 games. They've won 9, 10, and 11 regular season games the past 3 years. Chris Peterson, the best coach in the Pac-12, play Washington over 9.5 at even money.
Yeah, I really like that logic. We talked about ceilings and floors. It is an interesting sort of way that the schedule unfolds that their toughest opponents are all at home. You just mentioned Oregon, Utah, even USC. So going on the road to Oregon State, Colorado doesn't scare me that much. BYU a little bit. Arizona maybe gets crazy out there in Tucson, but you have to play like some games that'll be potential. So I like that, and it's actually a perfect segue to one of my teams that I got tipped off by you on is Michigan State over 8. And this schedule also, much like Washington's, that their three toughest opponents are all on the road. So that's different than Washington, but they're at Ohio State, at Whiskey, and at Michigan. But besides that, they should run the table in their other 9 games. So over 8 with a chance to maybe upset the Badgers at Camp Randall. And I just think that injuries were such a big factor for Sparty last year. Their offense was unwatchable at times. But Lewerke was banged up, and then Rocky came in. So I think they're going to be just fine. And I know a guy you love is Mark D'Antonio, thriving when he's the underdog.
Yeah, he does, obviously. He's got 8 starters back on offense. And if you watch the Spartans down the stretch, it was ugly. And it had a lot, mostly to do with Brian Lewerke's shoulder injury. That crippled the offense. I think Michigan State scored exactly 6 points in 3 losses down the stretch last season. It was bad, but, kind of forget that because Lewerke's going to be back. He'll be healthy. 8 starters back, like I said, on defense. And actually, this defense was number 1 in the nation against the run. Mark D'Antonio is great at bouncing back, and that's one thing. When you look at 2017, Michigan State was a 10-3 team. I do think the Spartans probably have the most challenging schedule in the Big Ten. Like you said, have to go to Northwestern, Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Michigan. But the flip side, Doug, this is kind of inverse of the Washington bet. The Spartans should win all 7 home games. I don't see a home game they're going to lose. And they have a road game at Rutgers that they obviously should win. D'Antonio has a pretty good track record of winning on the road. The one thing I'll say about this is this is my favorite win total play when the numbers came out. I played over 7.5 in I think it was early July. Might have been late June, early July. I loved it, over 7.5. At 8, you don't have the same type of value, but that's still a pretty strong play, I believe.
Right, and you don't – it takes 5 losses to lose, and that's tough to see. To your point, obviously you want to cash at 8 and not push. But the juice is minus 150 on the over. And something with that offense, they did change offense coordinator, so that's something to keep in mind in terms of if you really burned your eyes last year watching that offense. One of your other favorite plays is UCLA over 6 minus 1/4 at Caesars at last check, and Chip Kelly's second year for you, Matt.
Yeah, a lot of people hate Chip Kelly, and they're probably, I guess, a little burned out on him because of what happened in the NFL, and last year he stunk. I mean, if you think about at Oregon, he was 46-7. He lost more games than that in his first year in Westwood. He was no wizard. 3-9 last year. You know, there's signs of unrest in the program. People aren't, some of the players aren't really happy. Even parents aren't happy with Chip Kelly's style. Winning solves all of that stuff. And I really believe the Bruins are ready to win. 19 returning starters. And I love the way they played down the stretch last season. I was expecting improvement from UCLA in the second half of the season, and that's actually what you got. Their offense averaged 17 points in the last season's first four games. In the final four games, 31.3 points per game. I love the quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Excuse me, really good athlete, good fit for Kelly's system. How about Joshua Kelly, the running back, transfer from UC Davis? One of my favorite toughest. I really think he's one of the toughest running backs in the country, getting yards between the tackles and just bulldozing defenders. 1,243 yards, 12 touchdowns last year. He actually had 289 against USC. I love the way he ran that offensive line. A lot of people think Kelly is a spread offense, throw it guy. He's not. You have to run the ball in Chip Kelly's system. And this offensive line is better. The defense has got more veteran personnel. I think this opener at Cincinnati is going to be huge, obviously. But there were 5.5s out there in the UCLA win total for a while. It's basically 6 over minus 125 at this point. The positive on the schedule is UCLA avoids Washington and Oregon, the North Division favorites. I think Kelly at least gets to 6-6 here. He's got a good shot at 7 wins. I really believe UCLA is going to be one of the surprise teams in the country. Now, the win total at the end of the season might not show it, and that's what we're talking here is win totals. But I think it will. I think Kelly, if Kelly gets to 7-5, really UCLA's had a hell of a year against his schedule, and I think it's possible.
You know, I should have set it up by this time last year on a season preview. You said that UCLA is going to struggle out of the gates, but they're going to be a bet-on team down the stretch, and you really nailed it. That offense really improved, and I agree with you about Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I think this is definitely a bet-on team, and you nailed it. At Cincinnati, Bearcats laying 3 at home. That is going to be a huge sort of play for the season win total, but also just – their mo, because there were times where they looked completely inept, but they did get it together. They were really young. I'm a big Chip Kelly guy. I think he was ahead of his time, obviously, when he was at Oregon. So the gap between him and other coaches with the up-tempo offense, obviously the field's been leveled more because other guys are running it, but he's still a competent coach. And who knows what other twist he has that is going to be ahead of everyone else that, like we saw a handful of years ago. So I'm a big Kelly guy as well. Yeah.
I believe in the coach.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in Chip Kelly as a college coach, not an NFL coach, obviously, but a college coach. And I think he's going to get this thing turned around pretty fast and win at UCLA. I think one of the more intriguing games actually at the non-conference is Oklahoma,
yes,
UCLA at the Rose Bowl in September. I certainly expect the Bruins to give the Sooners a hell of a game, actually. We're going to see an inflated number. You know what? I shouldn't say that because we'll see how the Bruins play against Cincinnati in the opener. If they drop that game, I do think we'll see an inflated number in the Oklahoma game. If UCLA goes to Cincinnati and wins, that could be a little bit different story. People will start to jump on the Bruins bandwagon.
Yeah, the team total in that game for the Bruins is probably going to be, the over is going to be like a great play for me. I just think Chip's been probably studying tape all summer. That's a big game he has circled, if nothing else for recruiting. As much as the Cincinnati game is big, I think that's going to be a big, big challenge for him. And that offense should be able to put up a lot of points. Let's keep it in the Pac-12, Matt. I'm going to go to Wazoo. And you talk about coaches you like to bet on. I do typically like to bet on Mike Leach. I'm a big fan. But it is tough for me to go over 8. I have to go under 8 with Wazoo here. Look at the road games they have. Utah, Arizona State, Oregon, Cal, and Washington. And as Phil Steele pointed out in his magazine, I have to play like 11 teams this year that went to bowl games last year, and they lost Gardner Minshew. Now they bring in another FCS guy, but I just think there's a lot of tough games. I mentioned those road games. Also, they have to play at or Houston in the city of Houston, NRG Stadium. I don't see 9 wins from Wazoo this year.
No, I don't either. And actually, I wrote up the Pac-12 football preview for the VSIN College Football Magazine. And I recommend that under on Washington State for a lot of the reasons you mentioned. I don't think they can recapture the magic of the mustache in the Gardner Minshew last season. I love Mike Leach, just like you do. That schedule sets up, I think, for Washington State. I really think to be a 7-5 team. That's what I project out of Washington State. You know, another team in the Pac-12, Doug, you could look at playing under, I think, is Cal. And the number was out there at 6 for a while. It's mostly 5.5 now. But you look at Cal's schedule. How about this? The Bears on the road face Washington, Oregon, Utah, Stanford, and UCLA. How is Cal going to get to 6 wins? You know, how's Cal going to get to 7 if you bet that win total under 6? But I still think under 5.5, Cal's a pretty good play. That's a really tough schedule, too, in the Pac-12.
You know, I always, whenever I have a play, especially ones I really, 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 really love, I have to just talk myself off the ledge a little bit and say, all right, play devil's advocate. As much as you love this play, there's someone who absolutely loves it just as much the opposite side. So I'm like, all right, what do they see? Like, what do they see, right? And in this case, and I'm going to ask you this, like, Cal had arguably, you know, not arguably, but one of the best defenses in the country last year, but their offense was completely inept. It made Michigan State look like, you know, those prolific Oklahoma offenses. So I guess my question is, how can Cal's offense, like, not be better with all the athletes they have on this planet, all the coaching? Like, how can you just not get more effective on offense?
Well, I think they could be more effective, but they have a long way to go. You know, you talk about the Bears, and you think back to the Cheez-It Bowl, one of the worst bowl games ever played. You know, Cal lost 10-7 in overtime to TCU, and Cal's quarterbacks tossed 5 of the game's 9 interceptions. I think that's going to be the biggest problem for the Bears. Even if Justin Wilcox or his coaching staff, Wilcox is a defensive guy, even if his coaches can find a way to improve the offense, you're talking about an offensive rank near the bottom of college football in red zone efficiency and turnovers. You got such a long way to go. Yeah, I think Cal's defense is going to be great. Wilcox has improved that points per game from 42.6 to 28.4 to 20.4 in 2 years. You know, he's phenomenal as a defensive coach. This offense, this team is a wreck. And also, Doug, another thing you look at in win totals, were teams fortunate in close games last year? Because that luck tends to reverse, and the Bears were fortunate in close games. They upset BYU 21-18, upset Washington 12-10, USC 15-14. I can't see them, you know, that close game luck tends to reverse.
Very fair. And I just love that coach. So when you have the 6, that 6 key number for bowl eligibility, you can see that carrot dangled. But you're right, the schedule is very difficult. Let's keep in the Pac-12 while we're at it. One of my other favorite plays is USC under 7 wins. Now, the number has moved a little bit. It's plus 110 to the under. And this is all about a fade of Clay Helton. As much as I like the guy as a human being, and he seems like a good guy for the locker room, just his acumen and decision-making is really questionable. And I think maybe it's being the son of a coach and it's just being archaic in your philosophy and how you grew up. But I he's made too many bad decisions, and the schedule just doesn't lend itself where he's going to – I mean, there are going to be so many short numbers in a lot of these games. In fact, Matt, something you and I have talked a lot about is he's 2-11 against the spread as an underdog, which, I don't know, there's a lot of like things you can – kind of deduce from that, but it just shows you're like not delivering when you're facing competition of equal level or even a little bit superior to your team. You're just not out coaching the other team. And that's, by the way, that percentage, 15.4%, dead last of 553 coaches over the last 4 decades. So it's a large sample size, if you will. And I don't like JT Daniels. That was the other thing. So many of their quarterbacks have come in, whether it be Sam Darnold most recently and even over the years, Leinart and Carson Palmer, they've have kind of delivered. This guy was a 5-star recruit, but he has not looked like that part. Now, he was a true freshman last year, so there's going to be some growing pains, but I got to fade USC here at 7 wins.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Actually, I said last year, after I watched JT Daniels play one game, I said that he's going to be a fade. USC's going to be a fade last year. I thought he was an overhyped recruit, which happens a lot with some of these Southern California quarterbacks. And we'll see if Daniels matures and plays better. I think he's got a chance, obviously, to play a little bit better this year. He was in some tough circumstances last year with a, you know, poor offensive line and just a team that was kind of a mess. But I'm far from sold on the JT Daniels hype, and I think USC, you're probably right. One thing that's interesting, Doug, about USC is the change in offensive coordinators and how they're going to speed up the offense and kind of spread things out with Graham Harrell as the offensive coordinator, because obviously it was going to be Cliff Kingsbury until he got that Arizona Cardinals job. And then Graham Harrell comes in, and I've been reading some stories about how he's really making drastic changes in USC's offense. And I think that's something that's going to be interesting to watch early in the season.
That is interesting. And look, they have obviously a lot of recruiting, like strong recruiting classes. They can put it all together, and if they do, so be it. I lose the play, but I'll continue to fade USC, which has just seemed to be declining from their dominance in this conference. You see other programs obviously catching up to the pack and even surpassing them, like we saw in Washington the last couple of years. So let's go to the Big Ten, a conference you focus on a lot, and you like the Hawkeyes under 7.5.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten West is the toughest division of them all to predict. You know, a lot of people love Nebraska. And I like Nebraska a lot, too, because of the schedule and the way it breaks. The Huskers get so many of their toughest games at home. But I'm going to look at Iowa here. And Kirk Ferentz, he's been Iowa City 21 years. I have no idea why someone would want to stay in Iowa City for 21 years.
Hey, now, my old stomping grounds. First
yeah,
main
yeah.
TV market.
I notice you're not living there now. Nathan Stanley, I think, is one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten. But obviously last year he had some great tight ends to work with. T.J. Hockenson, the number 8 pick by the Lions. Noah Fant, the number 20 pick by the Broncos. You got two tight ends going the first round. How do you replace targets like that? Stanley had 26 TD passes. Half of those went to those two tight ends. I think that's going to be a big hole to fill in the Hawkeyes' offense. They went 8-4 last year in the regular season. Really, when you look at the Big Ten West, you get some young coaches who are on the rise who are making this division much tougher. Scott Frost at Nebraska, Jeff Brohm at Purdue, P.J. Fleck at Minnesota. This division's going to be a dogfight from top to bottom. Only 10 starters returned for Kirk Ferentz. I think winning 8 games is a lot to ask in that division, which is a lot tougher now with only 10 starters back. Ferentz can probably win 7, but you can play Iowa under 7.5, a +110. I really like this win total play, too.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of coin flip games. Even the rivalry game at Iowa State and Ames will be difficult. Even that opener, Miami of Ohio. I mean, look, I think they lost to an FCS school a couple years ago, or is North Dakota State. Either they lost or it was close. It was like a 2-point conversion it came down to or something. So a lot of these games you think are automatic wins on the schedule are tough. But Purdue at home, Penn State at home, those are difficult, obviously, at Northwestern, at Whiskey, at Michigan, at Nebraska. It is a tough schedule, and they do have magic in Iowa City. We know that. They beat Michigan. They've had some other miraculous wins at home. The Kinnick Stadium does have that magic, but yeah, there's no way I could bet over 7.5 here. Another team that I want to talk about is UNC. Not a lot of places offering this, but some enough do. 5.5 under 160, -160, and if you go look at this team, and this is obviously not a team that's going to be ranked or competing much for a lot of popular TV windows, but this schedule just does not have 6 wins. Mercer is the automatic win, right?
Right.
They're only favored in 4 other games, okay? Now, you obviously have some, you know, and even one of those games is Appalachian State, which is no automatic win. And by the way, I misspoke earlier. This was the school, not I think I said Wazoo. UNC faces 11 schools that reached bowl games last year, and that includes Clemson, which will be an automatic loss, I think. So I just think Carolina, I don't see in Mac Brown's first year getting the 6 wins. The schedule's too tough.
No, I agree with that. We talked about the Tar Heels on our show a couple nights ago, and Mac Brown can field a pretty good team this season and go 4-8. Because you look at that schedule, I don't know how the Tar Heels are going to get to 6 wins. Unless Mac's got some tricks up his sleeve, and this freshman quarterback's a lot better than we think. So, yeah, I agree with that play a lot, too. You got to waste, you know, some decent juice on that to bet it under, but it's probably worth it. I think that's going to be a winner.
And the nice thing is you can kind of play out of that, like we talked about earlier. You can play out of those positions a lot down the stretch if you're really worried about losing. And you can even try to go for middles. You can take UNC plus the points, and if you're getting double digits, maybe like, let's say, an 8-point or 8 or 10 or 12, and you get decent put, you can kind of middle it. They lose by 5. You stay alive in your season win total, and you collect on the point total with the point spread decision on that individual game. Let's go to your lovely state of Nevada, but let's go up north to the Wolfpack, and you're fading them as well, under 6.
Yeah, this Reno team is not as good as we've seen in recent years. kind of forget what you know about Nevada football, because I think this season's going to be a down one in Reno. Only 11 starters back from a team that went 7-5. It's kind of a pedestrian football team last year. Ty Ganji, 24 TD passes, a quarterback, he's gone. McLean Mannix, top wide receiver, transferred to Texas Tech, which I'll throw in as on my list, the top five surprise teams this year is Texas Tech. On paper, you look at the non-conference schedule, Purdue and Oregon losses, Weber State, Texas El Paso wins. From there, I think Nevada goes 4-4 at best in the Mountain West. I actually think probably going to have a losing record in the conference. You know, the Wolfpack will probably need to beat UNLV on November 30th to be bowl eligible at 6-6. What's tricky about this play, Doug, is I actually bet this at William Hill last week, under 6.5 at -145. I felt like it was a really strong play. I can't see Nevada getting the 7 wins. 2 days later, and right before you and I had this discussion, William Hill dropped the number to 6 at +105. So you can still play. I would still recommend under 6 at plus money, because I think this is going to be a 5-7 team, but still a little bit of value lost unless you can find a 6.5 out there somewhere.
And that's and I mentioned it earlier, that 6 is so key for the locker room and the teams, especially when you're sitting at 5 wins and going into the final 2 games of the season. That's just something to keep in mind, that it is, you try to handicap effort in advance. That is something to definitely keep in mind and project as you look at this, although we have seen some 5-win teams go bowling. One final play for you. Let's go to the Big Ten, Matt. Indiana under 6.5.
Yeah, and I think Indiana's going to be a pretty good team too. But, Doug, you look at the Big Ten East. That's brutal. How do you take a step up? Let's say you're a program at the bottom, like Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers. How do you crack that top four with Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and Penn State?
You don't.
You know, that's just a brutal way to live. And that half of the Big Ten, I think Tom Allen has got a pretty good team, but he went 5-7 the past 2 years. I think you'll see more of that this year. You got an Indiana. What's the win total you see on Indiana right now? Because there were 6.5s out there, and I thought that was a good play under.
That's what
you
I
still
think.
See six. Yeah, you still 6.5. Okay, because Stevie Scott, probably one of the better running backs in the conference. Indiana's got some exciting offensive talent. I think it's going to be a pretty good team. But again, the Hoosiers find ways to lose close games. Their defense last year allowed 424 yards a game. Can Allen fix the defense? He might be able to. Indiana, once again, is propping up its bowl hopes with a week 9 conference cupcake lineup. Ball State, Eastern Illinois, Connecticut, you know, Rutgers and Maryland should be league wins. The Hoosiers can get to 5, no problem. The trick is getting over the hump. Can they get to 6 or 7? They're going to be significant underdogs of Michigan State, Nebraska, Penn State, and Purdue. You need to spring an upset or two, which means they'll have to beat Ohio State, Northwestern, or Michigan at home. I just don't see it happening. So play Indiana under 6.5. I think 7-5, just highly unlikely for this Hoosiers football team.
Yeah, -140 at the Westgate on the under. And that's the thing with all this. If it happens, like we talked about all this, I don't see X amount of wins. I don't see Y amount of wins. If it happens on one or two of these, so be it. You can't win every play as much as we'd love to, but you want to sort of strategize and, like you said, the ceiling versus the floor on some of these. And, you know, we're going to be dead wrong and laugh about one of these, right? Like maybe even two of these, but they're all going to come down to it. And you just want to be on that sort of shaded side where you think it's more likely than not that they, you know, in this case, go to 6 wins instead of 7.
It's funny you brought that up, because last year I think I had, you know, what did we talk about today? About 8 win total plays apiece. I think last year I might have went like 6-2 on college football win totals. But one of my losers was just a ridiculous embarrassment. I played Washington State under, and the Cougars just blew that total out of the water. So that was a bad opinion I had last year. But you're right. Sometimes you're just going to be dead wrong about a team. And, you know, who foresaw really that Gardner Minshew was going to be that good and Washington State was going to be a double-digit win team. So I was dead wrong on that one last year.
And it happens. It happens, but it only counts as one loss, or just in the checkbook or the wallet as one loss. Matt, man, always good catching up, dude. Sorry we didn't connect in person this summer, but I imagine we will soon. But always good to have you here on the pod and also on Daily Wager.
Hey, you bet. Thanks, Doug.
All right, you got it. And coming up next, we'll check in on the SEC with Brad Edwards.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
Time now to welcome in my friend and former co-host on College Game Day on ESPN Radio and a man who I love to stop and chat with, whether it be college football or the Dodgers.
The Dodgers, yeah.
Brad Edwards in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I've been a little bummed in recent weeks that apparently the Astros and the Yankees are trying just as hard as the Dodgers to get the best record.
Unfortunate.
I'm hoping that at some point they'll just concede it and let it go and the Dodgers can just rest everybody in September, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No, it's not. But, you know, you and I grew up very different parts of the country. We have very little in common probably in our upbringings, but it's nice that we have that Dodgers common denominator.
We do, yeah. I grew up in Mississippi, but the first sports team I ever played on, my T-ball team, was called the Dodgers. And so since the mid-70s, I've been a Dodgers fan. I remember crying when they lose in the NLCS. And so, yeah, I go a long way back, and it's been quite a drought. And being a college football guy, I can give everyone the equivalent to the Dodgers' last World Series championship was my senior year of high school, 1988, which is also the last time Notre Dame football won a national championship. So if you're on the Notre Dame side and you know how long it feels, well, that's what it feels like to be a Dodgers fan.
Well, let's talk about, look at this segue. You wait for it. Notre Dame last year, I had a 50-1 ticket on the Irish, and they had to try to win the national championship going through Clemson and Alabama. A lot of teams have enticing odds this year because not many people like betting the favorites. Now, I just did a podcast with Matt Eumanns, and I said my favorite win total this year is Clemson over 11.5 because I just don't see them losing a regular season game. The whole Clemsoning thing is a thing of the past. But there are flyers you can take on a lot of these teams out here, but you're just not buying it. You're not buying these long shots are gonna pay.
No. And look, betting on a team to get to the playoff is a completely different proposition than betting on someone other than Clemson or Alabama to win the national title. And what I'm about to say, I don't presume this to be the case for any other sport, and I don't even presume it to be the case for college football in most seasons. But this is a rare point in the history of this sport where there are two teams that are just such a high level above everyone else that, and let me also couch this by saying, the model that we have for the postseason, the four-team playoff, where if anyone other than Clemson or Alabama is going to win this thing, they're almost certainly going to have to go through both of them in the playoff to win the national championship. And if it plays out that way, there are only two teams that I think have enough talent in order to win back-to-back games against Clemson and Alabama, and I think that's Georgia and Ohio State. And obviously, Ohio State has some questions it has to answer with a new coach, a quarterback who's never started a college game and all that. But just from a pure talent standpoint, given how good Clemson and Alabama are, I think there are only four teams capable of winning the national title. And I think if anyone's betting on someone other than those four, you're burning your money.
So you're saying you're lighting it on fire if you're taking like Texas at 25-1.
Yeah.
Or even Oklahoma at 14-1.
That's the way I feel. Now, look, I'm a numbers guy.
Right.
Okay, and the numbers are never going to say there's no chance. I mean, I'm pretty much telling you there's no chance.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I realize the numbers are going to say, okay, because there are always things that could happen. Like Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, and Clemson ends up being beatable.
Well, we said this in the NBA. Sorry to interrupt. We said this in the NBA playoffs, and I'm going to steal a line from Brian Windhorst, who I believe said it on this show or the Daily Wager. He said, unless something extraordinary happens, the Warriors are unbeatable. And you know what? Something extraordinary did happen with Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and Kevon Looney and Boogie Cousins. And now I'm not going to try to take anything away from the Raptors. Like, they were great. Obviously, Kawhi was fantastic. But I think Durant doesn't get hurt. The Warriors, in my eyes, win. But that's neither here nor there. But in this case, you would say something extraordinary needs to happen to Trevor Lawrence.
I would say if you're taking anyone other than those four to win the national title, and I haven't looked at the odds, I'm just guessing that you're not getting a lot of value on those four teams. Right.
Well, Alabama and Clemson are about 2.5-1.
Yeah.
So close to 50.
I mean, that to me doesn't seem like value.
Georgia
is
6-1. See, I think Georgia's 6-1 is not the best value at all. I would
considering they have to go through Alabama.
Right, I would take it maybe to win the SEC at something like 4-1 or something like that. I just think the combined probability of winning two playoff games, including one of which might be Clemson, makes it that much more difficult. Look, this is all one-way betting. I personally am not a big fan of one-way betting unless it's like a big chunk, 100-1, 50-1, something like that, unless it's to win a division, minus 125, and, you know, four-team race. So I typically avoid one-way betting, which means, like, let's just say for those new to the program, like a point spread is two-way betting. You can bet -3.5 or +3.5. There's some yes-no propositions, like a money line, which has a straddle, a gap between the money lines on both sides. But when there's just futures, like an index betting, when you can only bet Alabama +250 to win it all, you can't bet them -300 to not, then
yeah, so
there's not usually not value. But I would do Clemson, just me, because I think that's something you can play out of. I think there's no way they don't go to the playoff. Even if they lose one game, they're going to the playoff.
Yeah, I see your logic there.
So you
yeah.
can play out of it. Now, to your point, I had Notre Dame 50-1 last year, which was a rogue ticket, and I still got a great number, and I couldn't even play out of it because they were double-digit dogs
right.
to Clemson, and they would have been a double-digit. Now, you can project a line. If they beat Clemson, obviously their power rating is going to go up, and then they're still going to be a dog to Alabama, but it all depends how Bama looked in the semifinal, and there was a chance Oklahoma could have won. So it's just tough to take these teams. Like Washington, for example, might have an easy path or easier path, and then they're 50-1, but then you're going to be like, I mean, remember Sparty played Michigan or Alabama in the college football
right.
playoff, and they didn't score.
They weren't going to win the game.
They didn't score.
No, I mean, let's be honest. Over the course of this 5 years so far of the college football playoff, very few of the semifinals have even been competitive. All right, and so I mean, even if you're just forget about Alabama Clemson this year, just the history of this thing, there has most seasons been a gap between 1 and 2, and 3 and 4. And I think it's even more so this year than it's ever been. And so for that reason, I think that if you're betting anyone outside of those four that I just mentioned, you are now, whether you're actually thinking this in your head or not, the way I'm interpreting it is that you're betting that either Trevor Lawrence or Tua is going to get hurt, and you really are only going to have to navigate one of them at peak strength instead of both of them
for the season. I mean, because they could come back, they can get hurt in October.
Let's be clear. I mean, Clemson could play almost the entire regular season without Trevor Lawrence and still not lose more than one game and get into the playoff.
Yeah.
That's how much better they are than everyone else in their schedule.
And then let's say Tua does get hurt, then you're getting Georgia. If you're like Washington, you still have to play Georgia. Like, right. Let's say Tua gets hurt and Alabama does not win the SEC or go to the playoff, then you're probably getting Georgia or even LSU. And you're not beating them if you're Washington.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And so that's the way it works. Now,
so the consolation prize isn't exactly enticing.
I don't know what the options are. But if there's any place out there that's given you a choice of, okay, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia versus the field, that to me, if you're going to make a national championship bet, if someone were actually offering that, that would be the one, those three. Take those three over the field.
So -1,000. You would take 1 to 10? That's a lot.
1,000 is a lot. Yeah, you're not getting value there either.
Utah 50-1.
I would take Utah to make the playoff, maybe. I mean, even then, like, can they get through that schedule with no more than one loss? I give them a chance, but they're not winning it if they get there. And I see, look, people just, they're projecting their knowledge of other sports onto college football. Or even projecting what college football sometimes is, you know, where let's just say NFL. I mean, you could be the 8th best team in the league, get into the postseason, catch fire at the right time, and win the Super Bowl.
Baltimore Ravens, New York Giants,
in recent
memory.
A bunch of times. We've seen it happen with wild card teams in baseball. It doesn't happen in college football.
So you're saying Northwestern at 1,000-1 should not be a play?
No. Like, I mean, it's like some of these teams I look at, like I saw a list the other day, and there were a bunch of teams that are like 500-1 to win the national title. And I'm like, I'll give you 50,000-1. Forget 500-1. Like, they have no chance. Zero. Like, it's
Leicester City, though, is a soccer
okay,
fan that you
I mean,
are. Leicester
I am.
City
and that came out, and I would have told you there's no chance of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, maybe it happens. I don't know how often. I mean, that Auburn team in 2010, they were ranked around 20th in the preseason. And I, full disclosure, I would have told you before, they have no chance. Now, I had never heard of Cam Newton. You know, I didn't.
Even from Florida and all
no,
that?
No, I mean, he was a backup quarterback
right.
there. I'm not a big recruiting guy, so I wasn't
okay.
aware of him. But every now and then,
okay.
that one of those teams would come out of nowhere.
Well,
and
our former co-host, Trevor Maddich, in the 80s at BYU, they won a national championship.
It was a little bit different then.
Yeah,
but,
at
you
the
know.
Poll. Right, they didn't have the playoff dynamic where you have to beat two teams.
They also didn't have a selection committee that was going to hold their strength of schedule against them.
Fair point. Okay, so that was interesting. Let's talk about just some season win totals. I want to focus on the SEC because that's something you are close to. And let's start with Alabama, 11.5. They get LSU at home. Okay, they have to go at Auburn for the Iron Bowl. And I'm not too worried about like Duke in the opener. They don't have one of those kind of like they did Florida State or West Virginia or even Michigan the past few years. They don't have a lose a bowl game where they're like 12 point favorites. They're 30 something here. Any inkling that you think there's a strong play would be over under?
That feels right to me, 11.5, yeah. Because look, as great as they've been, most people know that outside of 2009, I mean, one time under Nick Saban, they've gone undefeated. Now, there have been a couple of times in recent years they've gotten to the national championship game undefeated before losing. So, yeah, certainly they can go 12, and we all know they can. But there have been a lot of those teams that have reached the playoff or even gone on and won the national championship, dropped a game somewhere in the regular season you weren't expecting. So I would say they are, you know, just as likely to go 11-1 as they are to go 12-0. And I don't think it's totally out of the question they could lose twice if something were to happen to Tua. So
you're more confident in Clemson over 11.5 than
absolutely.
Bama?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
To me, that's a no-brainer. In fact, I mean, if you were to put a gun to my head and make me choose over or under 11.5 on Alabama, I'd go under.
Okay. There's a prop, I believe it's at Westgate, 1.5 total losses for them combined.
I think I'd go under.
I would too. I think because we all know Alabama does not lose twice in a season.
No, like I said, unless Tua gets hurt.
Right.
Yeah, unless Tua gets hurt, I can't see him losing twice. And Clemson shouldn't lose.
I mean, we should just if you get some boredom and you want to go nerd out, look at like the FPI combined, like the math of that. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent where we sit there and start talking through math. That's generally not good audio.
Well, I think we lost everyone on the Dodgers in your high school years.
Yeah, but those two teams are like I do know FPI really well, and as far as what it typically is going into a season, and I've never seen such separation between the top two and everyone else as we see this year, and that supports obviously what I was saying about the national championship race.
Okay. So that's interesting. And I sent you an email about when we discussed this and had some of the win totals. And you think LSU over 9 would be something that catches your eye?
Yeah. Like I'm big on LSU. And one reason is that I think that people around college football all know that the position that has been their Achilles heel is quarterback.
Absolutely.
I mean,
offensive coordinator as well.
Yeah.
I didn't like the play calling.
Yeah, that's probably
the
fair.
The play design. The fullback we don't need.
Right. But they have put guys in the NFL at every other position, but quarterback has just been that's where they're coming up short. And while I'm not saying they've got a first round pick in Joe Burrow, I think Joe Burrow is better than a lot of people think that he is.
We saw a glimpse of that. Now it was UCF, and depending on how you feel about UCF, but we saw that in the bowl game where he won them that game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and so I look at their talent level, and for me, most years with LSU, they're going to win 10 games on talent alone if they don't go out and give one away. So if their quarterback just takes care of the ball, and that's something he did a really good job of last year, then there aren't that many teams that are good enough to just line up and beat them. Alabama is one. Georgia obviously is capable of doing that, but they don't play Georgia.
They don't have Georgia, yeah.
Okay, so you start looking at their schedule.
At Texas. That's a big
swing
game.
And that is a
game.
Huge one. And it's, week two,
it's
like it's
in
one
Austin.
Of those.
It's not
you know,
a neutral site, Jerry
and,
World.
And I think if you take LSU over, what'd you say, it's 9?
Yes.
Yeah, over 9. If they win at Texas week two, you got to feel like you're in a great spot.
Because they're going to beat whoever NW State is. And then
Northwestern State, that's an FCS team.
I thought it was, but I wasn't sure. Remember, that's the famous line. If Stanford had played Northwestern State instead of Northwestern,
3 years ago, whatever that was.
The McCaffrey year.
4 years, yeah.
They would have gone to the playoff. Georgia Southern's a win in the opener. But, I mean, we say that, but they also lost to Troy a couple years ago at home. So that's going to happen. I talked about it with Matt. We're going to have these like weird, wonky results in some of these season win totals, but throw those out.
The big thing for me with LSU, we know that environment. Now, like you said, they did lose at home to Troy, so Tiger Stadium doesn't mean they're unbeatable, and certainly Alabama
and then,
doesn't have any trouble beating
them. And then
them
even there. Like Mississippi State that one year that they had Dak Prescott,
right.
We didn't know Dak Prescott was as good as he was.
Yeah.
We thought he was good, but just not this level.
But I think in general with LSU, look at the road schedule. That's where they're more likely to trip up. And, you know, at Alabama, okay, I'm not saying they have no chance, but we would assume they're going
to
lose that one. So there's one loss. Where else are they going to lose? At Vanderbilt?
No.
I don't think so.
Mississippi State.
At Mississippi State, that's possible. At Ole Miss, I don't think they're going to lose that one. So if they lose the three road games, Texas, Mississippi State, Alabama, then you push.
Right. But okay, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate. Florida's losable, just like at Mississippi State is.
Yeah.
Florida at
yeah.
home. I would say it's more likely. Yeah, I'd probably say it's more likely they lose at Mississippi State than Florida at home. Although, no, yeah. I'd say more likely to lose at home to Florida than at Mississippi State.
Where Florida sits right now, with I think their weakness being on the offensive line, that's not a team I would pick to go into Death Valley and win.
But oh, I wouldn't pick either.
But they're
not losing to Arkansas.
For what
home.
It's worth, I think LSU is going to go 11-1, just okay. losing Alabama.
Okay.
And so therefore, I like
so
them.
Four
over
losses to yeah. lose the play. Like that's the other
right.
thing you have to look
yeah.
at. Like, pushing's yeah. okay. It's not like it's 9.5.
Yeah, and so that's one where like I was looking at FPI and how FPI looks at the SEC, and Georgia, I believe, was 11.
Okay.
Is the number that you had given me. And FPI gives Georgia like a 6% chance to go 12-0. So what you're looking at was it was like a 74% chance. Now, you can disagree with FPI, obviously, but it's like a 74% chance that they're going to be under 11 wins, and then a 20% chance they're going to be right on 11 wins. So it's like a 94% chance you're not going to lose. So as far as like safest bet,
well, Georgia under 11 is yeah. -$1.30.
Okay, and of course the price is going to come into play with all this stuff too.
And so like that means it's just very simple. You do 130 divided by 230, and that's 57%.
Yeah,
so you have to like tell yourself, does this happen more than 57% of the
right.
time? But you have to factor in the expected value of pushing too, and I don't know how to do that off the top of my head. Because
yeah,
you have to factor
course,
in the likelihood of exactly 11.
And then, of course, with a win total, you're also tying up your money for 4 months or, you know, whatever it may
Unless
be.
Unless you play on credit. With your buddy down the corner.
I know some people are reluctant to do that. If they look at the number and they say, you know what, I think it's most likely to push, but if it were to go one way or the other, I think it's going to go this way. And then when it comes down to it, like, you know what, I just don't want to tie
like,
up my money
okay,
for that long.
You brought up Georgia. Those are good. So they're at yep. home to Notre Dame.
Yep.
Then they're versus Florida at home. Did they lose that game last year?
Well, it's not at home. It's Jacksonville.
Yeah. They lost that game last year, right?
No. Nope.
They lost at LSU. They lost to LSU. So they have the Florida in the game in Jacksonville, and they're at Auburn.
Yeah. I mean, right now you would favor Georgia in every game.
Right.
The game at Auburn 2 years ago. So remember, it's 2 years ago when Auburn had both Georgia and Alabama at home.
Correct.
They get that again
we
this
there.
Year.
We were there.
We were there for the Georgia game.
Right.
And they you know, won both of those games easily. And I think that's probably the one that scares you the most if you're a Georgia fan, just because right now Auburn's big question is quarterback. They're going to almost certainly
have a freshman.
Problem is I
don't see two losses on the schedule.
Yeah. Now, and that's why I think a lot of people would say, you know what, 11 is probably a good, like I said, 11.5 is a good number for
so
Alabama.
What
I think 11 is a good
is
number
if you
for Georgia.
Can, there's some alternate win totals sometimes, maybe, or you can just get a rogue number, 10.5 over -200 or something like that. That's probably the better play there. Another school you like in terms of maybe flying under the radar is Tennessee because of quarterback play. We'll
yeah.
explain that.
Yeah, so Jarrett Garantano for Tennessee is not a guy who's real high on a lot of people's radars. And he's not super
Excuse
high
me,
on
the
mine
number
either.
6.5.
Okay, so. 6.5 for Tennessee. I look at their offense, which is returning almost everybody from last year. And you would just think whenever an offense has that many guys coming back, they're going to get better. And there are a few numbers that I look at with him where I can see they definitely should get better. One of them was that he had a very high pressure rate last year. And every quarterback, whether it's Kyler Murray all the way down
right.
to the kid at Rutgers who was atrocious last year, they're all going to be better when they don't get pressure than when they do. And he had a very high pressure rate. And with his offense all coming back, I would think that they're going to do better in that department this year. And so that in itself, I think, is one thing that should help him be better. On top of it, he had, and this is kind of maybe in the weeds for a lot of people, but we have a stat that's called catchable pass percentage. In other words, what percentage of his throws were put in a position where they could have been caught.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a drop if they don't catch it, but it was close enough that it could be caught. And he had a higher number than most quarterbacks in the country. And I think he had like the fourth highest number of those throws, catchable throws, that were knocked down by the defender. What that tells me is that he's forcing a lot of throws into coverage because his guys aren't creating big windows for him to throw in. They're not getting a lot of separation. And that's another thing, which I think second year with a new offense, all the receivers coming back and all that, that should be something they do better with. And on top of it, you're talking about Jeremy Pruitt, who is a really good defensive coach. He's in his second year, and I would just expect his team is going to get better defensively too. So you put the two together, better offense, better defense. And I look at that schedule, and I don't think you're going to go up and down that schedule and say, okay, these are, you know, nine games that they absolutely should win. There are only three games on there that I'm like, probably not. You've got at Alabama.
Yeah, loss.
Okay. Home against Georgia, probably a loss. I'm not going to say they can't win it, but probably a loss. Mm-hmm. Same thing with at Florida, probably a loss. But the rest of them, I don't think it's out of the question for them to go 9-3. I'm not going to pick them to go 9-3, but I think the other nine games are very winnable.
BYU at home?
Yep.
How's BYU this year? I have literally no idea.
They came on all right at the end of last year. I think they'll be decent. They'll be better than they were a year ago.
Miss State at home?
Yeah, they get some good games at home. Mississippi State at home. South Carolina at home. They've actually struggled with Vanderbilt in recent years, and they get Vandy at home. I think if you look
at the Battle of Tennessee, I don't know.
If you're looking at this, you know, at this win total, the two key games for me are at Kentucky and at Missouri, which are both in November. If they win one of those games, they're...
And that's interesting. I know that's something Bear, Chris Felica, talks about. Is just like Penn State's a really young team, so he thinks they're going to be a lot better at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Just the growth of them.
And that's what I was saying about Auburn.
You're talking about this school with Pruitt in like the second year and end of the season. Are they going to be better? Is it better to go at Kentucky and at Mizzou at the end of the year versus early in the year?
Well, I think when you got a team that is coming or returning as many starters as Tennessee is, I think you don't want to play them early in the season because they're probably going to be a little bit ahead of you as far as that goes. But this whole idea, though, wanting to play them later in the season, that's what I was saying before about Georgia having to go to Auburn, because Auburn's question mark is at quarterback, where they're going to have a freshman. And by the time you get to November, he's not going to be as green as he will. Like, I'd rather get Auburn when Oregon gets them and out of Jordan-Hare than to get them at Jordan-Hare in November when they've started to figure out what they're doing at quarterback.
Finally, good old Ole Miss. It's been spiraling down since they were 1-2 with Mississippi State in those college football playoff rankings midseason a few years ago.
That seems like forever ago if you're an Ole Miss fan.
The Egg Bowl did not decide the national championship as much as people wanted to make it project that it would be. But this is obviously the program's been through a lot, and it's unfortunate just when you see anything happen like that to a lot of kids or whatever. But you're fading them again here.
Well, I'm not so sure about Ole Miss.
Four and a half.
This is actually the one that FPI likes the most of all the plays in the SEC over 4.5 for Ole Miss. FPI says 83% chance Ole Miss goes over, and I know some people who like them. This is a team I would stay away from.
Okay.
But what I would say is this, though. I think one other one, though, that I would consider is the under for Arkansas, and I think the Ole Miss game is the key to that one if you're looking at Arkansas.
Gotcha.
So I think it was 5.5 was the number that you had shown me for Arkansas.
Yeah, Arky's 5.5.
And Arkansas should go 4-0 in the non-conference.
Excuse me, you're right. I didn't misspeak.
You would have said that last year too, right? Arkansas should go 4-0 out of conference, and they lost at home to North Texas. Now, North Texas is probably better than anyone they play out of conference this year, so they still should go 4-0. And if they do, they've got to win two SEC games to beat you. So I look at that schedule, and I see three SEC games I think they have a chance to win, and one of them is Week 2 at Ole Miss. And so if Ole Miss wins that game in Oxford, then Arkansas is going to have a really hard time going over 5.5. The only other two that I would give them a decent chance are at home late in the year against Mississippi State and against Missouri. And you know, Missouri's one of those that, I mean, as we sit here today, they're on probation, can't go to a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
If that's to be held up, and if they find out, say, midway through the season, yep, that's not changing, you're not going to a bowl, Missouri's probably going to sell out for the Georgia game, and that's going to be like their bowl. You know, that they've got Georgia. I think Georgia's coming into Athens. I can't remember the date on that, but I believe it's in November.
November 9th.
And so that's the one. That's probably like the circle the wagons. This is our bowl, guys.
Right.
And whatever happens, win or lose, I could see the possibility of Missouri just kind of being flat the rest of the way, and maybe that gives Arkansas a chance here. But like I said, they've got to win at Ole Miss, I think, for them to have a realistic chance to beat you at over 5.5.
Arkansas.
So I would say under on Arkansas, over on LSU and Tennessee.
And then Ole Miss, FPI.
FPI likes.
Don't shoot the messenger, but you're saying Ole Miss is the one that FPI likes. Hey, man, this got me fired up. I just love talking college football, and obviously it's early, and we haven't been doing it every day, so it's good to connect. And how about the Dodgers, man? That offense, too.
The difference is that they're still hitting the home runs like they were last year, but then they're having more productive at bats when they're not hitting home runs.
Where do you stand on the bullpen?
I am obviously disappointed because they're really bad, but I think they've got some really good pitchers there. And you know, baseball is all just catching fire at the right time. So they've got guys who've done it before. So I'm
warming up to the bullpen. I think Joe Kelly's the key.
Kelly has gotten better, and
Jansen
just can't give up a home run every third time he trots out there.
That's can't have an ERA over 3 as your closer. All right, man. Look, it's always awesome catching up. Hopefully, we'll do it again on the pod soon.
All right, looking forward to it.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
That's where we're going to need to play if one of these bets does not hit. But thanks. And by the way, Bob Lee lives on. Yes, he's retired and cleaning out his office, which my cubicle is located right outside of. But Bob Lee, I told him he's going to be forever a staple here on the Behind the Bets podcast. So we appreciate his lending his brand. And yes, Bob Lee, as much as a guy who will never use the word brand to describe himself, he is a brand of credible journalism, especially because we're approaching our 40th anniversary, Dop, of ESPN launching in 1979. It's in September.
That is incredible. 40 years?
And we call them around here the 79ers, and Bob Lee is a 79er.
Yep.
There's a handful of those still around from that launch date in 1979. I forget the date. It's in September, though. It's early September. So thanks to Matt Humans, thanks to Brad Edwards, and thanks to all of you for listening in. I've sent a lot of T-shirts out for those doing the pedicure, so please tweet at me those pictures. I'll send more T-shirts out. We have plenty to give away for the pedis. And Dop, I appreciate you stepping in and then filling in the producer's role.
You know, I appreciate you being here and filling in the hosting role.
All right, good stuff. So next week we're going to talk NFL and more college football until kickoff for the opening weekend. So thanks to everyone, and exciting times for Daily Wager, and exciting times all across the sports landscape. It's always gambling season, but it's always particularly fun with football season here.